Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, April 16th. And just sitting here very jealous of playoff teams in the NBA and also even the teams talking about the NBA draft so far. And here we are on Locked On Pistons. But this is your boy Matt Shook, an AP writer out here in Chicago covering the NBA. Pistons fan and follower my whole life and also a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade. Today, we're going to be talking about what the weekend was. The first round of the NBA playoffs got going. Run down Saturday and Sunday's games and also talk about tonight's action in the NBA. Going to be sharing with you the interview that I did with Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets, the former Pistons second round pick. This is a little bit of a stomach punch for some of you guys, but we'll listen to Spencer as he made his case this season for possibly most improved player award honors. He won't win it as Victor Oladipo will win it easily, but maybe he'll be top five finisher in that award. We will see as the voting comes out in the next couple weeks. But I'll also have be sharing with you guys a couple surprising notes from the postmortem Pistons clips. The guys, Vince Ellis, Rod Beard, and James Edwards III all did their recap and grades articles and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to share with you what I thought were some of the highlights of those ones. But first, talking about basketball action. The NBA playoffs got underway with a four games apiece on Saturday and Sunday. The game started on Saturday with the Raptors getting a yawner over the Washington Wizards. They'll probably sweep or win that series in five, I would imagine. Then the Warriors rolled the Spurs, and of news coming also that there will be no Kawhi Leonard this offseason as well. So certainly no series there in the balance. The 76ers, kind of surprisingly, without Joel Embiid, ran away from the Heat, got a 27-point win in that one. And then the biggest game, or the best game of the day, the late one, the New Orleans Pelicans topped Portland as the Trailblazers came back in a furious comeback at the end but couldn't get it done as Anthony Davis and the Pelicans held it off after a couple of great defensive plays from Jrue Holiday that sealed that one. Then Sunday, the Celtics knocked off the Bucks at home in overtime. That was kind of overshadowed in some ways as the game was amplified by Chris Middleton, the former Piston, knocking down a ridiculous three-pointer from a few steps inside the half court line, and he knocked it down to send that game into overtime at the end of regulation with 0.5 seconds left. But then Giannis fouled out, and the Celtics took care of business at home, getting the 1-0 lead in that series. The Pacers knocked off the Cavs, who only scored 80 points despite a triple-double from LeBron James. Expect LeBron to recover and play really well in Game 2, I would imagine. Oklahoma City rather easily, 116-108, were kind of in control throughout the entire game, from 36 points leading the way from playoff P, Paul George, as my Utah Jazz, the team I picked to win that series, went down in Game 1. Then the Rockets in the late game on Sunday had a little bit more trouble with Minnesota than was expected. But James Harden, the presumed MVP, was great late, 44 points in the game from him. So, you know, we don't want to overreact too much from Game 1, but some of the ones that stood out to me were Philly rolling up on the Heat like they did, New Orleans getting the road victory in Portland. That series looks like it's going to be a very interesting one. Could go the distance. We will see. And, of course, every game is going to be interesting between Boston and Milwaukee. I still think Milwaukee's going to win that series, but you know, interesting to see how the Milwaukee fans, and I know some Bucks fans here in Chicago, so they're kind of a fan base that is really tired of their coaching situation. They kind of ran, and for good reason in a lot of ways. Jason Kidd was run out of town during this season, and Joe Prunty's there kind of with that substitute teacher feel of a guy who's kind of in a short-term fix for that team, and certainly they're going to be a team that's going to be looking for coaching help in the offseason, and who knows what's going to happen with the front office as well. A team that's going to have to pull some sort of strings this offseason if they're going to recover in a good way going forward with Giannis as the cornerstone of that team. But tonight, the Game 2s begin as the Heat will be taking on the 76ers again at an 8 o'clock Eastern start. Philly 6.5-point favorites running into the game on a 17-game winning streak now, including the final 16 of the regular season. Joel Embiid did clear the concussion protocol on Sunday. Doesn't necessarily mean that he will play. We're not sure if he's going to go, but certainly we were expecting to see him beat either in Game 2 or possibly Game 3, not much longer than that if he's held out even more than that. But Hassan Whiteside, even without him beat in there, Whiteside was non-existent in Saturday's Game 1. 2 points and 6 rebounds in 12 minutes, and most of the damage inside was done by Kelly Olynyk. So, and obviously Miami, a proud team, a lot of good players on that team, and obviously Eric Spoelstra is one of the better coaches in the NBA as well. We will see how they bounce back from getting drubbed in game one by guys like Bellinelli and Saric and Ben Simmons, of course, doing some damage for the 76ers as well. And then the nightcap tonight, 10:30 start, will be the Spurs taking on the Golden State Warriors in game two. The Warriors are 9.5-point favorites, and again, no real reason to think that that one is going to be any kind of series, even with Steph Curry out for, it looks like, the remainder of that series as well. Up next, we're going to be talking to Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets about his favorite game of the season, and Detroit Pistons fans might not want to hear about that one. But if your company is interested in men between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if you want to reach that group, this is your spot. Plus, our rates are reasonable. So email me at Matt_Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
A little bit later, we're going to be taking a look at some of the Pistons' post-mortem press pieces about the local writers and a couple of the surprising nuggets in there to share about their articles that I perused over the weekend. But before I share with you the Spencer Dinwiddie interview, it's important to take a look back at how we got here with him. Halfway through his junior season at Colorado, where he was trying to resuscitate the program, which has been kind of downtrodden basically since Chauncey Billups had been there in the 90s. Dinwiddie tore his ACL midway through his junior year back in early 2014. Hurt his draft stock, obviously, and he became a second-round pick after leaving college early. Went 38th overall to Detroit. 3 picks, by the way, before Denver picked up Nikola Jokic. Dinwiddie was Stan Van Gundy's first pick as president and GM of the Pistons. They didn't have a first-round pick that year, as the club had to unload a first-rounder to get rid of Ben Gordon. And, oh man, the last half of that Joe Dumars time in Detroit. If you ever get down on Stan, and I know you probably do if you're a Locked On Pistons listener, think back to some of those Joe Dumars' last half of his time as president of the Pistons back then. But 2 seasons in Detroit for Spencer Dinwiddie. He played in 46 games for the big club, also played a lot with the Grand Rapids Drive as well. Dinwiddie was decent at times as a floor manager, but struggled big time with his shot at the NBA level. In 2 seasons in games with the Detroit Pistons, he was a 31% field goal shooter overall, including 17 from three-point land. So abysmal numbers, obviously, for a guard in this league. He was traded in the offseason in 2016 by Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons for Cameron Bairstow, the Australian, who was cut by the Pistons before training camp that year and has been playing professionally in Australia ever since. So obviously a nothing that the Pistons got for him in return. Meanwhile, Dinwiddie played for the Windy City Bulls of the G League after being cut by the Bulls in training camp. He played well in the G League and was picked up by the Nets, who, it should be noted, as a team at the bottom of the standings and a bottom of the league, they have the luxury to check out guys for extended runs. One of the benefits of, and they're not tanking, they're actually a rebuild team because they've lost their first round picks over the last couple of years in that trade where they got Garnett and Pierce and gave a bunch to the Boston Celtics. But being in that kind of situation makes it a little easier to find roster spots and playing time for those guys. And you can come across a diamond in the rough like Spencer Dinwiddie. You can think about a guy like Robert Covington of the Philadelphia 76ers, who's been another example of this over the years. So Dinwiddie last year played in 59 games for the Nets, and he started 18 of them, starting to get some traction for that team, as they played pretty well toward the end of last season as well, with Jeremy Lin kind of leading the way for that team. As I remember they had like a great February, beat the LeBron James Cavs once in there as well. And then this year, Jeremy Lin goes down with a season-ending injury on night one of the NBA season. D'Angelo Russell, who the Nets picked up in a trade with the Lakers in the offseason, he gets hurt early in the season as well. So the door opens in the backcourt for guys like Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert, who we had on the podcast last week. Dinwiddie made huge strides this year, averaging 12.6 points per game, 6.6 assists, and 3.2 rebounds. In the conversation, whatever that means, for most improved player of the year, like I said, won't get it, as Vic Oladipo definitely will. But Dinwiddie to even be mentioned in that is a testament to the strides that he's made with the Nets this year. He lost his starting spot as the season wore on late in the year to D'Angelo Russell as he came back from injury. And the season didn't end as well as it had started. And obviously during the middle of the season where Dinwiddie was playing great in December, he was setting career highs, it seemed like every night, for the Brooklyn Nets. A lot of big shots too, some game winners. And then he went on to the All-Star Skills Challenge in Los Angeles and won that as well on a night that Pistons fans may not forget, with their Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker also winning the big titles for the night, and three guys that should be wearing Pistons uniforms in a lot of fans' minds as well. But as Spencer told me in our interview last week, his biggest moment of the season was a January 21st one in Detroit at Little Caesars Arena, and he talked about that with me here in this interview that I did with him here in Chicago last week, and here it is.
Here with Spencer Dinwiddie of the Brooklyn Nets. What's been kind of the biggest reasons for the breakout season that you've had this year?
Opportunity. You know, D'Lo and Jalen got hurt, and obviously my minutes went way up, and shoot, Karis also got hurt too. So, you know, sometimes we're operating with obviously not that many guards, so I was afforded the time to play.
What's it like playing on such a young team where you guys are kind of building for the future? What's that like kind of compared to some of the other situations you've been in?
In Detroit, it was much more of a win now situation. For the brief stint in Chicago, it was also a win now. So obviously it carries a completely different tenor than development. I think in a situation like this, you know, mistakes in terms of wins and losses aren't obviously as prioritized as, like, you know, a team that's fighting for every little inch of a seed and et cetera. So it's just different, you know. It's a lot different.
It's a little bit easier to play, a little bit more, you know, less pressure in some ways, would you say?
I would just say the pressure's different, you know, because in a development-based system, you know, pressure is kind of on individual and team collective growth, you know, versus like wins and losses, whereas the pressure in a different situation is on wins and losses. So you can have a bad game or whatever, but let's say your plus minus is good or something like that and you help the team win, like, it doesn't really matter because you guys got that win and you move forward towards the playoffs and stuff. So it's just a different pressure.
As far as you individually, did you approach coming into your third organization any differently, or as far as, you know, things that you were doing differently, even on or off the court practice, things like that?
Not really. Being a second-round pick and then also coming off an injury, just coming into the league, I understood, you know, I had to scratch and claw for every inch that I got. Nothing was going to be promised, and so that approach has kind of been the way I've approached every team I've been on. It just so happened that obviously there were injuries at this spot, and, you know, afforded the time to play and made the most of it.
Would you say that you've been able to step up, you know, the point guard position, a bit of a leader here in Brooklyn as well? Have you kind of taken on some of those aspects of play?
I would like to say so, but, you know, we've got a lot of people in here that are leaders, and, you know, it's a constantly evolving situation day to day. So, you know, I can't say that I'm like the unquestioned leader or anything like that for this ball club.
Well, what would you say that your big focus is on this offseason as far as moving your game up to the next level?
I would think just kind of really continue to prove everybody wrong, obviously, with the fact that I lost my job and, well, not lost my job, but am now back on the bench. People are going to have their doubts. You know, people are going to continue to question me because of the fact that I was a second-round pick and the fact that this good stretch of games came in my fourth year and not in my first or second. So there's always going to be naysayers and people with questions. All I'm trying to do is basically prove that I'm a star in this league and hopefully one day have a team and lead that team to a championship.
As you look back on this season, you said a great stretch of games there, especially in the winter. What is there one or two that stand out? Is it big games or big shots that you hit that kind of, when you look back in the year, jump out to you?
Oh, I mean, my favorite would be the game winner against Detroit. You know, obviously I had several game winners this year, game-clinching shots, but, like, the one against Detroit was particularly special just because, obviously, you know, that was my first stop and where I spent most of my time, so.
What are the things you remember about that shot in particular in the lane? I believe Drummond was coming up to almost get a piece of it.
Yeah, no, Dre was really close to getting it. We just ran kind of a zipper play. I turned the corner. Ish did a great job recovering. Drummond also did a great job contesting. It was just fortunate to go in. It was a blessing. It was a big moment in my career just in terms of, like, pride and stuff like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was just one shot, one game. you know, we're still here at 6-7 wins, something like that. So we obviously have a lot of work to do.
Thanks, Spencer.
No problem.
Spencer Dinwiddie talking about that January 21st buzzer beater that he had at Little Caesars Arena against the Detroit Pistons, 101-100. The Brooklyn Nets pulled it off. It was in the middle of a long losing streak for the Pistons there. Andre Drummond had made a shot with 4 seconds left. It looked like that it was going to be the game winner, but Dinwiddie goes on and kind of puts up, does Ish Smith on him, which at the time, obviously, I was critical about having Ish Smith on at the game-deciding basket juncture there for Stan Van Gundy, have him out there. Dinwiddie goes right at him, and like I said, this is during a stretch where he's doing nothing wrong and is just making it happen for the Nets in game-winning situations, and did it there on a Sunday afternoon where the Pistons were slogging through a losing streak, had lost. This was their fifth loss in a row during a streak that would become an 8-game losing streak before the Blake Griffin trade. So this was right in the middle of the time when Stan Van Gundy was thinking about what to do with his roster, what to do with his team, kind of going forward there. And Spencer Dinwiddie drives the stake in the heart on a game that the Pistons were sluggish with all game long and able to get the win. And obviously you can hear from him there about how important that one was in terms of his overall career. But we're going to be talking about some of the press clippings that the Pistons had over the weekend from some of the writers, a couple of surprising things that jumped out for me, for all those guys, James Edwards and Vince Ellis and Rod Beard. Each of them had something that kind of jumped out at me. But speaking of teams, I was talking to some friends watching the playoffs over the weekend. We're already talking Detroit Lions, drinking the Kool-Aid, getting ready for next year, and the new coach, Matt Patricia, in Detroit. Locked On Lions podcast with Matt Derry of Detroit Radio. You know him. You should check that out every day. We got podcasts for every NBA team, every NFL team, NBA draft, NBA fantasy, MLB, or NFL draft, and MLB teams coming as well here on the Locked On Network. Your team every day. Another thought I wanted to pass along as we look to the Pistons offseason here, the forthcoming meeting between owner Tom Gores and Stan Van Gundy, which was talked about last week when Tom Gores talked to the media in Detroit at halftime in the game, the final regular season game against Toronto. That meeting might not even be this week, by the way. If you watch the interview with Tom Gores, they were asking him where it would be, if it's going to be in Michigan or in California. And he said in California, but he was saying like things like, I think it's going to be in California. And when I talked to Stan Van Gundy before the game with Chicago, the season-ending game, he was also non-committal on when that meeting would be. It sounded like Stan thought he was going to take a week off and basically do nothing. So that meeting might not even be this week. Gores was kind of speaking more generally of sometime in the future as opposed to saying it would definitely happen this week. So if you're waiting for the news about Stan Van Gundy's future, that if that meeting, that news might not break for another week or so. And even so, I think as this drags on, you see the teams that fired their coaches did it, you know, within 24 or 48 hours of the season ending. So I think that kind of backs up what I've been saying as far as the likelihood of Stan Van Gundy probably coming back, at least as coach of the Pistons. Now, that being said, it's not like there are coaches being hired right now. There are interviews going on with the New York Knicks and the Charlotte Hornets as well, but it's not out of the question that Stan could still be fired as coach. But I think that as time goes on, if nothing happens, I think the likeliness that he stays continues. But speaking of some of those press clippings of the postseason variety, James Edwards III of The Athletic, who does a great job and did a fantastic job in his first season covering the Pistons for the pay website there, he gave out some of the postseason awards for Pistons and said the MVP of the Pistons was Blake Griffin. And I thought that was a weird choice that he made there. I would have had him third behind Andre Drummond and Tobias Harris for this year. I think Drummond was a very obvious choice for that. But it seems like James was kind of making more of a symbolic pick for the franchise going forward as opposed to like a performance-based analytical look at what they did this season. The Griffin era was the finishing touches of the collapse of the season, while the Tobias Harris span, which was longer than the Griffin era in terms of compiling more good stats and all that kind of stuff, that was the one that was filled with promise. So like I said, a strange pick there. But I think it was an article that was not really to be taken literally as far as here's who I thought was the MVP of the Pistons. It was more of a, this is a guy that could help, you know, drag this franchise out of the mud going forward. One of the press clippings from Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press, he did a piece where he talked about the percentage likelihoods of Pistons players coming back. And I was surprised at some of them, especially in the middle group there. Obviously, he had 100% 100% chance that Blake Griffin comes back. I think it was like 85 for Andre Drummond. For Reggie Jackson, he only had it as a 70% chance. I thought that was a little bit strange. Given his contract and really the way that his last couple years have gone, it's pretty much an untradeable commodity at this point. If you want to get rid of Reggie Jackson, you're going to be have to attaching assets to him. Now, obviously, if there's some huge trade in the works, then maybe it's possible that that he might not come back. But in going through some of those numbers, Vince Ellis, I think he thinks that Stan Van Gundy is going to make a huge deal, or whoever is in charge of the Pistons' personnel decisions is going to make some big trades this offseason based on these percentage numbers that he's giving some of these guys coming back. He doesn't think that Stanley Johnson will sign an extension this summer, by the way, which I agree with. It's coming to be a big fourth year coming up from him. The Pistons have him under contract for one more year, but he could potentially become, if he doesn't sign an extension this summer and into next season, the deadline will be October 31st for that. Then he'll be have the potential to become a restricted free agent after next year. And like I said, between July 1st and October 31st, the Pistons have a premium on the negotiating rights to go with him going forward. And they could still extend him in the following summer as well, but he would be a restricted free agent at that summer, and teams could throw a contract offer at him as well. It's one of those guys who could go either way next year, but if you're a believer in him as the Pistons front office, maybe you lock him up for what could be a bargain deal this summer, and that's going to be one of the bigger questions for the franchise this offseason. It won't impact, if he does sign an extension, it won't impact next year's salary cap as he's locked in on that rookie deal, but it could be something that it has caused teams to be able to save some money with some of these guys in the past. But like I said, I don't expect that to happen, and I expect him to go into his fourth year as a Piston without that extension. But like I said, some of these other percent chances that Vince threw on some of these guys leads me to believe that he thinks there's a very good chance that there's going to be some big trades that the Pistons make this summer. Henry Ellenson, he gives a 65% chance of coming back. John Luehr, a 65% chance of coming back. I don't know how you trade John Luehr coming off of an injury with the amount of money he's owed over the next 2 years. So Vince must think there's something big coming. Langston Galloway, same thing. There's no way you're going to be able to trade him unless you have a big deal put together. He had him at 65% chance. That's not a very big number. He had Anthony Tolliver as a 50% chance coming back. I think that that's maybe a little bit lower than that, in my opinion, given that the raise that he's going to be due as an NBA free agent and the amount of cap room that the Pistons will have. And in addition to the fact that Henry Ellenson and John Luehr might be available to take some of those minutes that Anthony Tolliver had. We all appreciate the season that Anthony had and would love to have him back, but it just may not work out. Interesting notes that Vince had Dwight Bikes as a 30% chance of coming back, noting that there's probably going to be an upgrade for the third point guard spot. He also had James Ennis as a 20% chance of coming back, which I think is pretty accurate, as I believe Ennis will probably be elsewhere next season as well. Rod Beard did some grades for the team this year on the Detroit News. He gave A's out to Reggie Bullock and Anthony Tolliver. Can't argue with those, although I might drop Tolliver to an A-. Maybe I'm being a little stingy there. Rod Beard might be that teacher in high school that you might want to have, because he seems to be a little bit generous with grades for a team that was, you know, under 500, missed the playoffs by four games in the week Eastern Conference. Even Jameer Nelson got a D, and obviously didn't have to do much to earn that D. Everyone else on the team got at least a C-, including Stan Van Gundy, who had a C as head coach and C as president in a year that he has many Pistons fans wanting him to get fired. So that's kind of a look at those guys. Those guys all did a great job following them. A couple of those guys have been doing it for many years. Vince, I think he came on right when the Pistons kind of folded as a franchise in a lot of ways, and he's been covering a lot of the mess. So hopefully for Vince's sake, he gets to get out there and cover a little bit better basketball going forward. And I think Pistons fans will agree with me on that as well. But give us a follow here at the Locked On Pistons Twitter feed at Locked On Pistons on Twitter, and also at my account at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. And also go to the Facebook page and give us a like at Locked On Pistons-Matt Shook. Thanks to Spencer Dinwiddie for taking the time last week to talk to us here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. And thanks to you guys for listening and all the support. And we will talk to you all again soon. Enjoy the playoff games tonight.